I stopped by my daughter's house. You know, I just want to use the phone.
Oh, my God, it's Buddy Guy playing at the Mehewi in Great Barrington this Sunday at 7 o'clock. Mehewi.org for more information. Still sounds really, really, really good. Buddy Guy on playing at the Mehewi on July 14th. Hey, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the roundtable for this 12th of July. It is a Friday, and, well, it's about time. So we welcome all of you. We welcome you to write. Yesterday, we did a live broadcast from the Linda. Two of the participants are with us in the studio today. It was a lovely broadcast, but we didn't get to have letters from our listeners today. We will go back to that practice. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. All right, let's introduce everybody and we'll get started this morning. WAMC's Alan Chartok. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, and I have an announcement, if I may, Joe.
Yes,
and,
sir, please.
And that is tonight, John Davidson was supposed to be at the Guthrie Center. He couldn't make it, and they have a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful group. Everybody's going to love them. The Agitators, with Don McGrory and Paula Bradley and Miles Lally and Slink Moss, maybe the best name I've ever heard, Slink Moss.
Slink Moss.
And tonight at 8 o'clock at the Guthrie Center in Great Barrington, I know everybody's going to want to be there because they are a fabulous group.
The Agitators.
I know Paula and have played music with her, and she is... She's got quite the stage presence and the chops.
Excellent.
She's the best.
I know.
She's also a member of, you know, a certain other band that
I might have heard of that band. I don't know, though.
Probably not on her name right now, but okay. Well, that's great. Thanks for giving me that opportunity.
You're very welcome. Well, good morning. It's great to have you here. We missed you yesterday, but we're hoping you're feeling better and good to have you here today.
It's going to take a while. I've been hearing from a lot of people who've had concussions, and it takes a long time to get over them. That's the way it is.
Well,
we'll hey, take, in we, every life, a little rain must fall.
All we have is time, right? That's what we have.
Oh, my God. Stitch in time saves nine. Any other cliches we want to throw out?
Hey, Rosemary Romeo is here. Good morning, Rosemary. How are you? It's she
kind of scratchy, huh?
Investigative journalist and curmudgeonly this morning.
Yeah, it's the weather.
Yeah. Well, good morning. Welcome. Aaron Pasitti joins us as well, Siena College economics professor. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. I don't think time is linear.
I'm sure you're right.
Oh, that's a good start, too.
It's always a good start when you bring the show to a halt. Yeah, I like it. Judith Enk is with us, senior fellow and visiting professor at Bennington College, founder of Beyond Plastics, former EPA regional administrator. Judith Enk, good morning.
Good morning. And, Alan, I have a concussion story that'll make you feel better. When I was about 8 years old, I fell in a playground and got a concussion. And after I got better, after a while, the doctor and my mother insisted that when I returned to school, I wear a football helmet for a few weeks. I remember it like it was yesterday. It was like a blue-purple helmet, and everyone made fun of me with good reason. And I wore it for weeks at a Catholic school in Queens, and I mentally survived that experience.
How many years have you been in therapy?
Because of that one thing.
Yes, oh my God.
Decades.
I got to
get me a helmet.
Yes, get a football helmet with the thing that covers your mouth. It was rather traumatic.
You also have brought a guest with you, someone who Alan knows, actually. So we're thrilled. But tell us about your guest today.
Yes. So our guest is a big supporter of the Rensselaer Plateau Alliance that preserves land in Rensselaer County. And this is Sheila Mahan.
Mahan. Depends on how Irish you want to get, but go ahead.
Of Averill Park, and because of her generous support of the wonderful conservation group, the Rensselaer Plateau Alliance, her prize was to sit in on the show today.
Cool.
to which Rosemary said,
I would rather have money. This is your prize?
Now, and Sheila worked for a long time at SUNY Albany. What did you do? Well, come on up to a microphone rather real quick. I just guess we get this quick.
I was Associate Vice President in Academic Affairs, working on enrollment management.
And you worked with Alan?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Hi, Alan.
Sorry.
For a long, many, many years. Well, welcome. Have fun. Enjoy. We'll try to be on our best
and
behavior.
And thank you for supporting land conservation.
Yes, and it's really nice to have you in the studio. We have an extra chair because David Soares called us at the last minute and said he was in some... where is he?
He said he was at a conference. Normally, people know about conferences weeks in advance.
Thank
but,
you,
Aaron. You know,
I wasn't going to say it, but I'm glad you did.
I think he's afraid of me.
Sorry, David.
Been avoided. This is the second time now that he's ducked.
You know what's so great, and that is that we always say, okay, we for a very special reason, we'll allow somebody to win presence at the, for whatever that means, at the our morning show. And so when it happens, the understanding is they never get to talk. And every time we hear their voices, which is great.
Yeah.
And that's due to you, Joe.
Well, I want to have her say hi. People know that she's in the studio. But good morning, Sheila. It's nice to have you here. And again, you were supposed to hear David's voice, but he's at a conference. Okay. Good morning, everybody. Let's get started. We'll talk about what's happening in the world, and there is a lot going on. We talked yesterday at great length about the citizenship question on the census. We were speculating. We will give Sarah Rogerson credit. She pretty much nailed it yesterday
exactly.
in the morning. said as to what was what she thought was going to happen, and it was pretty much exactly what did happen. The president says he will seek citizenship information from existing federal records, not the census. He abandoned his quest to place a question about citizenship on the census form and instructed the government to compile citizenship data from existing federal records instead, ending a bitterly fought legal battle that turned the nonpartisan census into an object of political warfare. Mr. Trump announced in the Rose Garden that he was giving up on modifying the census 2 weeks after the Supreme Court rebuked his administration over its effort to do so. Just last week, Mr. Trump had insisted that his administration must pursue that goal. Alan?
Well, as you know, I take a different view than most people do on this, and that scares me a little because it may mean I'm wrong. But everybody's painting this as a very tough loss for the president. I think this guy just wants to scare the hell out of everybody who might answer the question. And I've thought that from the very beginning. I think that's who he is. And if he's not going to do it that way, he'll find five other ways to scare the hell out of people from coming forward. If I was somebody who was undocumented and I had heard all of this nonsense from the president, I would be very concerned about risking all by answering the census.
Alan, I think you're right, and I think it's even worse. I mean, on one hand, this was a clear legal loss for the president, and I hope we can talk about the bizarro comments of Attorney General Barr. But just imagine this. Someone knocks on your door. The census takers wear uniforms. It's not just if you're an undocumented immigrant. If you are an immigrant, if you look like an immigrant, if your last name sounds like you're an immigrant, you're not going to open the door. You're not going to fill this out. And so I think the president has achieved his two goals, neither of which was honoring the Constitution. One is there will be an undercount in states like New York and California, which means we're going to lose out on federal money. We may lose a congressional seat.
You will.
Right.
We already know you will.
So there'll be the undercount. And then secondly, it's more encouragement to his anti-immigration base. Last night at Troy City Council, there was a big debate whether or not to declare Troy a sanctuary city. I was not at that meeting, but I got a full report from my husband who sat in. He was there on a clean energy initiative and got to sit in on the long, long meeting. And he said it, you know, it sounded like a Trump rally for many of the residents. So this anti-immigrant, which I also think is a racist sentiment, has permeated all levels of government, not just Washington.
I think there's an economic component to this, too, and that is what Judith said, appealing to his base. You know, for a lot of Trump supporters, you know, they haven't seen rising wages, inequalities exploding, and it's very easy to point to the other, whether it's you know, women in the workforce or undocumented immigrants or even legal immigrants. There's always somebody else taking my job. There's always somebody else competing for lower wages, and that really appeals to his base. So it's a very clever, you know, re-election campaign tactic. And, you know, people should be pointing the finger at his Secretary of Treasury, his Secretary of Labor, his entire cabinet, himself. So this, yeah, this does play into a grander scheme well beyond getting an accurate count of the number of, you know, non-citizens in the U.S.
I'm quaking at the number of headlines that call this a big loss caving in from the president, because this fits a pattern. When he has lost before, he has come back with a more organized and actually professional way of getting his nefarious racist goals. And that is, seems clearly to me, what's going on now. The bizarro comments that you mentioned by Barr. Barr is his man. And Trump is learning slowly, too slowly, to rely on him. When he wants something done, put Barr on it. And Barr has figured it out, that there is a sentiment on the court. We saw it in the gerrymandering, that redistricting is not a judicial thing. It's a legislative thing. I think that fits in with Robert's goal that he wants to rebalance power among the three branches. And he's pulling out, in addition to protecting the court against Trump's you know, idea that it's his court, he's apportioning out goals back down to the other two branches. And he and Ruth Bader Ginsburg supported him, said redistricting is a legislative function. So what they're doing now, you watch, is that they're going to push the idea that is already held and has been upheld by courts in Texas, that we only count citizens, that if you're just a person here in passing and you're undocumented, you do not count.
Yeah, I think Barr has emerged as the most dangerous cabinet member. And it's going to be a problem on many, many issues. The issue then comes up, what do we do as ordinary Americans who want to be a welcoming community for all people? And actually tonight, there are 750 different events happening all over the country under the banner Lights for Liberty. And at the state capitol in Albany, you can turn out from 7 to 9 p.m. To protest the Trump policies, not just the census, but the tragedy that's unfolding at the border. I'm very concerned about these announced raids in 10 cities that start on Sunday and will go beyond Sunday and will pick up people. They're calling them collateral strategy. If you happen to be in the home, even though you could be legal or you could be a child, you will also be picked up in the raids. So I would go to lightsforliberty.org. There are events up and down the Hudson Valley this evening.
And in Great Barrington, I may add.
Great.
Pittsfield,
yeah.
I'm going
Pittsfield.
To.
Pittsfield. So I think that's one thing that concerned citizens can do, in addition to calling members of Congress and donating to groups that are trying to provide humanitarian relief to these people who are targeted.
Give the website one more time, just because if you go on it and you put in your zip code, it'll tell you the ones that are nearby you.
Great. It's Lights for Liberty, lightsforliberty.org. And you just put in your zip and
events all over the place.
Events.
How many would you say? 750 or something?
750, including Kingston, Rhinebeck, Oneonta, Beacon.
I understand.
And the lights, by the way, will be people with candles and non-flammable candles that children can hold.
Yes.
Or your cell phone.
That's right. Your cell phone light. Okay. Were you going to say something else?
No.
Okay.
Can I add something?
Oh, it was him. Sorry.
So, yeah. We look just alike. I
heard in my left hand ear.
You know, it was very clear from the uncovering of all of those documents that the whole goal of adding a citizenship question to the census was to channel more money to Republican districts. Mm-hmm. If you look at the flow of funds from states to the federal government, most of those come from blue states, mm-hmm. New York and California specifically. Texas is the one bogey in that. So it's you know, doubly bad in that you're robbing, you know, the blue states who contribute more to federal coffers in the form of income taxes primarily because they're the wealthiest states, that that money then gets increasingly reapportioned to poorer red states, which just serves to solidify the Republican base. This is a political objective. It has nothing to do with enforcing the Voting Rights Act or getting an accurate count of the number of citizens.
Jack writes us a note. I don't want to take your letter reading from your Joe, but he says census workers do not wear uniforms. I thought that was the case because we have a wonderful census worker around here, and I don't remember him coming around with a uniform on. We like to keep ourselves honest if we can.
Absolutely. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. And we'll talk more about this topic as well as move on to other issues in the news as well. Panel at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Judith Enk, Aaron Pasitti, and Rosemary Armeo. And we will continue our conversation after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We have Alan Chartok, Judith Enk, Aaron Pasitti, and Rosemary Armeo. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org, where we got letters like this. Lisa, she just sealed the envelope with her donation to WAMC, says, love you guys. I'm simply exhausted with Trump's antics. He has never read our Constitution. I'm wondering what Barr is actually gunning for because he's ruining his stellar reputation. I don't believe that ICE raids will happen because Trump's all talk, no action, and has to do this nonsense to sustain his base. Bluster and bloviating are his business.
Good letter.
Yep.
It may be a good letter, but I think it's probably wrong. This is one mean guy, Trump. And, you know, symbolically, it may not be as extensive as people expect, but I'm sure he's going to do it because it's an easy thing to do and because it does fill his hand with those people who are, as Aaron said, antithetical to the others. I bet he does something.
And as Rosemary said, he's probably not appreciating the headlines in today's paper that he had a legal loss. So I think it's more likely he'll do it. They've even announced that even though New Orleans was one of the targeted cities, because there is major storms and hurricane and flooding coming in New Orleans, they're not going to do it in New Orleans. But I bet you there are probably some people in New Orleans who won't evacuate because they didn't get the updated message that New Orleans is not going to be targeted.
We will. We're going to talk about the New Orleans and the story going on there a little bit later on. Continue with letters and go to Bob, who says, will ICE be rounding up undocumented immigrants and Italian, Irish, Polish, and other European ethnic communities this weekend, or will they only be targeting
Hispanic?
Yeah. People, yeah.
Great letter. What do you think?
And they won't. They won't be rounding up people who work in Silicon Valley. They won't be targeting people. Most people overstay their visa and they come here by plane. They don't cross the border. But I doubt those folks, and I don't think they should be. But I doubt those folks will be targeted.
You know, it's. He said 10 cities, mm-hmm. and 2,000. People. That's not that much. You know, that's like, what, 200 families per city? So it's almost like a photo opportunity.
But it's the optics of it.
Yeah, that's exactly
it. Sarah said that yesterday,
it was
good that it was lower in number, but it was also scary because it was planned. Yeah.
But if the president gets good press, it's going to go well beyond. It starts on Sunday. It goes beyond Sunday, but he'll keep doing it. I'm curious if people will go to churches and synagogues and mosques for sanctuary, and will the Trump administration try to break that norm too and enter religious buildings?
Hey, you know, we know that this has been We know this has been going on all along anyway. You know, this is not something that's new here in Great Barrington, in Albany, and other places. You know, a big black car comes along and somebody's been there for 20 years, disappears, and that's been going on for quite a while.
Well, I this is true, Alan, but I hate that argument, and I hate when I hear especially people in Sarah's business made it. Trump is not the first president with a terrible immigration policy. Obama deported more than Trump has to date. But there's just something different about this. It's that never before were enforced long stays and inhumane conditions at the border. There was not the kind of triumphant press puffery of a roundup like we're seeing this weekend. That's different, and it's mean. It's just what you said. He's just mean and cruel. He's using this for his own political advantage without regard to the misery that's causing individual families and to the trouble for American industry.
Yeah.
Agriculture suffering, and that's an economic argument. I'd like to hear you on
puffery.
That.
Puffery. Go ahead.
You know, one
sorry
of the,
for that setup.
That's
go
right.
ahead.
Well, that's right. I can't match puffery. What the biggest long-term headwind to U.S. economic growth is a declining labor force. We have
right.
an aging population. So to the extent that, you know, Trump has an economic policy, an easy solution to that is import workers.
Yeah.
And instead of deporting them, you find a path to citizenship for them or a work visa or something that would
accommodate
help grow the
them
economy.
And accommodate us.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's a win-win. And instead, he's proposing a lose-lose, which honestly isn't surprising because he has no concept about economic policy.
Wow.
Well, he does, except that it's not geared to the common good. It's geared to
his idea, 1% Aaron, buddies. Seems to be that when a plant closing is announced, he calls up the CEO and does the buddy buddy, hey, this is your friend in the White House, like right. let's call this off for a while. And I'm amazed that so many businessmen fall for that.
But in the end, it doesn't work. So
no,
the
Carrier first, showed
yeah,
that.
The first and, time right. he tried it in Wisconsin, and that's not coming together.
No. And with same with the car industry, it doesn't.
General Motors.
But it does make headlines, which is
for
what he most
day.
Cares
yeah, right.
about. And it does give the impression. I mean, I read Hugh Hewitt every day, every time he writes, not every day. And I'm amazed. He goes, the left is not acknowledging the good things he's done. And it's same with immigration. Oh, he pressured Mexico in ridiculous, horrible, non-ally-like ways. And so there's a drop in the numbers for 1 month. It's like, yay, a victory. We're not doing any long-term thinking at all.
And Hugh Hewitt is, like, more on the reasonable side.
I know. He's, like, a smart guy.
Yeah.
And he just saying, no, he's just not getting credit for any of the good things he's doing. Look at what he's done with jobs. And I have to say, explain this to me. I'm so annoyed that the economy is doing so well because it shouldn't be. He should not be getting credit for
okay,
this.
The world's largest economy is like an oil tanker, that it has inertia and it has momentum that date to policies that go back decades.
Right.
So the fact that it's continuing to grow, which it has been since June 2009, has very little to do with...
Oh, can I break in?
Interruption.
Can I break in?
Yes.
Labor Secretary Acosta has resigned amid furor over the Epstein plea deal. We were going to get to that story today, and what was interesting about that...
Julie Brown just won the Pulitzer.
Mm-hmm.
By the way...
yeah,
I
won it anyway.
Yeah, I promise you we'll get
true.
Back to economics.
Right.
I,
okay,
But it is... the story was actually on our docket today because we were going to... one of the things that this article was saying is that basically, the president was going to be watching and see how the press responded and to see...
That didn't really work out well.
You know, he was going to... They're going to... Was going to see that the president spoke with him and he felt good. He praised him in a press opportunity, I believe, on Wednesday. He did it again in tweets on Thursday. And but all of the aides that were talking to the press were saying that he was very closely watching to see what the mood of the press was, the mood of the coverage, and that a decision would be made from that. As you said, that didn't go well, especially for Acosta.
2 days ago, Joe, I said, you know,
he's
I hate
toast.
To take credit for myself, but yeah, no, I said, stick a fork in him.
Yeah.
Because, and when Mnuchin, the president's top guy, and who now has about 14 different jobs, said, you know, said bye-bye, I thought that was as good a signal as we were going to get.
Well, it's always a kiss of death when the president says he's standing by one of his his cabinet members, and then he just watches the news cycle. I do think that this issue still needs tremendous attention. I think it goes a lot further than the Acosta resignation. I think they're just trying to get this off the headlines. But think about this. We have a president of the United States who is a self-described assaulter.
Lover of younger women.
Yeah, assaulter of women. The Access Hollywood tape. The journalist Ms. Carroll came out most recently with her really concerning accusations. I believe now it's 16 women have publicly said that the president of the United States has sexually assaulted them. So he did not exactly have the moral high ground to publicly say that Acosta needed to leave. And when, you know, he defended Acosta the other day, he said he felt very, very badly for him for what he's going through and never acknowledged the suffering of the Epstein victims.
Well, but it gets even worse than that. This president not only had to do with Acosta, obviously, but he had to do with Epstein.
Yeah,
they were together.
They were buddies.
They did things together. They had 20 women in a room with only the two of them in this so-called calendar thing. So the real issue here is who knows what went on between those two guys.
Well, this is in the court, and I'm happy about that. I'm happy that Epstein went. That's only right and fair.
But no,
this
Acosta
is not
went.
A, sorry, no. sorry, sorry. Acosta went. Epstein's on his way out. But this is not grounds for happiness because some other more horrible person will be put into labor, or there'll be another acting cabinet officer, and there won't be a labor secretary at all. That's been the pattern.
The vast majority of the cabinet are acting. I mean, this is
exactly.
record. You know, Trump really... First of all, he appoints such incompetent or ethically compromised people, and then the media does their job. And then the sad thing is that a lot of Fox viewers who are supporters of the president, if we turn on Fox now, which I do not recommend, they'll just say
no,
that
I have to.
It was unfair. It was
on.
Unfair that this guy was driven out. He was a U.S.
It
attorney.
Was unfair that he was ever appointed to be Secretary of Labor. He's
and
got
we knew
no
this.
Labor experience.
One other thing here that is so important. We know that this president has tried to take away as much power from Congress as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So when we say they're acting, right?
They don't have to be
look
Senate
at all
confirmed.
These acting people. Right. That fits in pretty well, right, with what we are seeing from this president. He takes away from the Senate, even his own Senate, you know, by a few votes, the right to confirm.
Right.
That's astounding, and that's why I suspect he's pretty happy with all of these actings.
Well, he has said that, and I can tell you that as a former federal appointee, I was not Senate confirmed because I was just a little regional administrator. But in the wheels of government and the bureaucracy, it really matters if you are a Senate confirmed staff person, because the rank and file will take your direction much more seriously. They treat the acting like they're the substitute teacher.
Well, that may have been true up to now, but I don't think that's the case anymore, Judith, possibly under Trump, where bureaucracy has a whole different meaning. He belittles it. He puts his political appointees in. And I mean, the rank and file may not have respect, but if they don't obey, they're out. Witness the scientists in the agricultural department.
It's rare, though, that they're out. I take your point.
No, all but right. I think Rosemary's right about that. There's been a real change.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue on this story, and we'll talk about others. I would like to talk about Epstein just for a little bit longer, because there's really some...
Because sex scandals are the best thing we talk about.
No, more
odious.
Things. Well, more things have come out about this in the reporting. It's just horrible.
Yep.
But so
yep.
We'll dig into that a little bit when we come back right after this.
Mustang Sally, baby.
On a Friday morning, nice. Buddy Guy playing in the Mehewi in Great Barrington this Sunday, 7 o'clock, mehewi.org.
Hello to all the Sallys out there.
Yeah.
Hi, Sally. I have a good friend named Sally. Hi, Sally.
Good morning. Well, all right. Let's. So we're just before the break, we had the news that Labor Secretary Acosta is resigning amid the furor over the Epstein deal. We're finding out a little bit more, and I'm sure this is just the tip of the iceberg as far as the number of stories that we're going to have coming out about Mr. Epstein. The latest police reports are saying that investigators hired by Epstein trailed accusers, questioned their boyfriends, even chased an accuser's parent off the road. Also, we learned yesterday that that Epstein's attorneys are proposing detention, where, you may ask, at his $77 million mansion in Manhattan.
Such a deprivation.
Yes. That is unbelievable. It's really unbelievable.
But that's not his legal residence, though. It was the Virgin Islands when he reported as a sex offender.
Pedophile island. Right. But that's what apparently was called. But you can't let him out on bail because he'll continue to try to intimidate accusers.
Or will run away. He's got the money, apparently, somewhat less than he says, but enough money to run away easily.
And Judith, the truth of the matter is he has agents who can continue his work in terms of undermining the accusers.
True.
So when you look at this the story, obviously, how does this, with Acosta gone, does that in any way help the president distance himself from the story?
It depends on what Acosta and Epstein are willing to say, right?
Yes.
I mean, they know a great deal, obviously. They palled around with him. Certainly Epstein palled around with him. But, you know, there's a whole bunch of guys who have been holding out for pardons. And in the case of a federal accusation here, Trump has that power.
Well, so, I think Bill Clinton should be worried, too. Mm-hmm. And Julie Brown, the reporter from the Miami Herald, who's booked the story, said on television the other day that she called it a rumor, which is interesting to hear reporters talk about rumors. You don't normally report them. You report on them. But she said there is a rumor that the falling out between Epstein and Trump was over Epstein making a pass at a young girl working at Mar-a-Lago, and that there truly was. And Trump, in that story, looks good. So we don't have the whole thing. But an increasing number of women are coming forward now, and that's pretty interesting. There's been like 15 since the story broke, or not part of the lawsuit.
We have a lot of letters, and I want to get to them. The first, though, is from Marcia, who says, could you please allow Aaron to finish the oil tanker explanation of the economy?
Yes, I agree. Good letter. Can we do that?
Yes. So go ahead.
So the U.S. economy is like an oil tanker, and it's powered a lot by inertia, and that you get feedback cycles. So when, you know, we came out of the 2008-2009 recession, Obama's stimulus helped spur the U.S. economy. That led to a positive feedback loop where businesses were hiring, so consumers had more money, so they were spending more, so businesses hired more. And that process just continues and continues and continues. And economists call that an economic expansion. And right now we're in the longest expansion in U.S. Economic history. So the fact that Trump has been in office for two and a half years, the best he can claim is, well, I didn't cause a recession, because the way an economy grows is largely independent of, small scale political changes to policies or regulations. Of course, he'll take credit for passing, regulations allowing more oil drilling, or the corporate tax cut, which spurred hiring and a boost in investment. You know, those had very marginal impacts. Most economists agree on that. It was a lot of smoke and mirrors that were handouts to his wealthy CEO buddies and one percenters. But for Trump to take credit, It's really unfortunate that he is the president that has presided over the longest expansion in U.S. history. He just happened to be in the right place at the right time. It's got nothing to do with his policies.
No, it's not even the credit or the blame that bothers me. It's like, how long can he get away with? How long will this go on? And what, again, should consumers be doing?
Well, this is why we should be very happy that we have an independent central bank, the Federal Reserve, who's in charge of really controlling the direction of the economy.
But do we, Aaron?
Yeah, I'm with you, Rosemary. Is he rolling over?
I've said this from the beginning. I think Powell is I disagree with some of his regulatory policies, but in terms of, you know, the technicalities of monetary policy and understanding how the U.S. economy operates, I think Powell is on target. And let's not forget, it's not just Powell. It's the entire Board of Governors, district Federal Reserve presidents, a staff of Federal Reserve economists. Powell is just the face and the chairman of the Federal Reserve, but there's a whole group under him that are supporting him. So I don't think he's rolling over.
He's no Bill Barr?
There has been talk about he's definitely not Bill Barr. Since the Federal Reserve lowered interest rates to zero, and now they're between 2.25 and 2.5%, the biggest risk the Fed faces is that if there is another recession, they will not be able to lower interest rates enough to spur the economy back to a healthy growth path. So what the Fed is thinking, and it's unfortunate, Alan, because it just so happens to be timed with Trump's criticism of the Fed, is that the best way to prevent the next recession is to give the economy a little bit of juice as it continues to expand to essentially prevent the recession from happening.
Now, as I like to say, Professor, and I have no respect more than for you and what you've brought to this
panel.
Hold
on to your seat, Aaron.
Yeah, I know. I'm ready for it. I've got my football helmet on.
However, the fact of the matter is, most Americans don't have your level of knowledge or sophistication. They know, and he's bragging, that it's good under him. And let's face it, so would Obama or anybody else during this time. And that has to be helpful to him.
It absolutely is. There is no doubt that the strong economy is benefiting Trump because he can say, well, you know, are your wages higher today than they were under the Obama administration? And the answer is yes.
Small increase.
I mean, it's minor, but there's more jobs. You know, the tail end of an expansion starts to bring in the more marginalized members of the labor force.
Right.
So they're seeing benefits. And yeah, Trump's taking credit for it, as would any president.
We have some more letters. Let me get to these before we go to a break for news at the top of the hour. While Commissioner of Customs and Border Protection complains of the legal loopholes permitting asylum requests, writes Russ, ICE continues to look for loopholes to incarcerate asylum seekers and use their supposedly unaccompanied children, who actually do come with guardians, as bait for their undocumented relatives already in the U.S. Given the current composition of Congress, we won't be passing new immigration laws, so Congress should force compliance with the current law, allowing asylum requests to proceed within the U.S. Adherence to the current law should require humane treatment of asylum seekers, not summary imprisonment.
I wish it was so, but that's not what the Trump administration is doing. The majority of children that are in some of these detention jails in Texas and Arizona, the majority of them have family in the United States, and they can be released to them, but the Trump administration has decided not to do that.
How did this letter get through? Daniel writes, Alan is correct. A fair amount of census
damage. Thank God.
A fair amount of census damage is already done. The fear-mongering is constant and relentless. Thank you for speaking the truth on a daily basis. Mike checks in. Good morning, panel. It is not true. Undocumented workers do not get Social Security numbers, so they do not receive the same government benefits that other low-income citizens receive? The issue of illegal immigrants seems to be one created by the 1% at the top who want to convince the working poor that their problems are all caused by illegal immigrants, better than blaming the real cause, the 1%.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yep.
Gina writes, with the detention camps already dangerously overcrowded, where do they plan on holding all of these new detainees?
Hotels.
Yes, they said
Sarah
hotels.
Talked about that.
Yeah.
And yesterday Marriott changed their mind and said they would not accept people
Good.
To be detained.
Good.
We don't know the names
yeah, is
of
that
the
good
other.
Or,
yeah. Yeah,
is that
I know.
Good or bad?
I know. I was a little torn. Like maybe it would be safer for people.
We had this. We had a discussion with us. Was it Wayfair? Wayfair had
right.
The employees
yeah,
were
the home
making
company.
Beds.
They were there was a boycott called on Wayfair, and employees were walking out because they had a deal with the detention centers to offer the beds. Okay, but don't they need the beds?
Yes, of course.
You know,
no.
And it's,
come on, no.
No?
Sarah has
Tell
said
us.
This. You have to be aware. You have to resist. And every time a Marriott says, no, you're not going to use our hotel for these horrible purposes, every time Wayfair says our bedding is not going to help support camps, and for-profit camps, by the way, mm-hmm. on children, that is a good thing. You have to
yeah, but
resist.
What about the kids who then don't have the room and they don't have the bed?
Come on, then you're catering to Trump. If he doesn't have beds,
no,
he
I agree,
be
but
them
I know,
down.
But you understand the
alternative's
the
worse. The alternative yeah. is so much worse. It would be great if, I mean, I think it would be an interesting political statement for hotels to open up rooms and say, "Bring them here. They'll get three meals a day. They'll have nice beds." I understand the point because it's going to happen. Given that it's going to happen, what should the response be?
I think it's a hard issue because politically, I completely agree with you that you have to resist and target companies that are complicit. And then on the practical side, and why, you know, I have a hard time sleeping at night, you just think about the reality, the daily right. reality of these people who are being jailed. And do you want them in these tents on the Texas border?
Yeah, do you want a
border?
Kid sleeping outside?
And you put them in a Marriott and they have three meals and the problem goes away and Trump wins.
All right. I
mean,
it.
I don't disagree
I
with you. I'm
and
just,
they probably are not going to be that well treated at the Marriott.
Let's leave it at this. I don't like either of the options.
Yes.
Yeah. That I can
there we go.
Go with.
All right.
Yes.
Excellent.
Joseph. Let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue. We have a lot of letters. We welcome your panel at WAMC.org. Ray Graff is next with news.
Love comes out of nowhere. Just like a hurricane, and it feels like rain.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel, as we say in the States, panel discussion. Good morning. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Aaron Pasitti, and Judith Enk. And we thank you for your letters. We do have several. We'll get to those. And then we'll move on to other topics, if that sounds good to everyone. Hearing nothing. I go to Maureen, who says, I heard we're in a long-term decline because we don't have the right workforce for this tech and global age. So this is for Aaron to comment. We need women and train younger people like the immigrants we should be investing in for the future of the nation. Trump et al. Are economic dinosaurs amongst other de-evolutionary tendencies. And the question is, are we on our way down?
So, I mean, in my opinion, yes. Economists call that secular stagnation. It's a period not of permanent depression or recession.
I'm going to use that phrase today.
But it's a period of exceptionally slow growth where...
I'm going to buy their music.
Yeah,
secular stagnation.
Yeah, somebody should have an album called that. but it's a period of, you know, below average growth, above average unemployment, but below average wage growth. Part of that's due to the declining labor force. Part of that is due to the rising cost of education. Part of that is due to the costs of environmental pollution. The rise in income inequality is sucking purchasing power from the bottom 99% to the top 1%. There's all of these headwinds that are really going to slow U.S. growth over the next century. And we really need radical ideas to start combating that. And I think the Green New Deal is a good place to start.
Wow.
What?
Are you available for personal counseling later about nearing retirement?
I hold office hours at Pauly's Hotel after the round table, so sure.
Okay.
Really? Okay. Yeah. We go to Mary, who says President Trump will ask other agencies for citizenship and other data on Americans. Isn't it illegal or unconstitutional for various agencies within the government to work together to compile a database of citizens?
Always scary. I wish Fran were here. That's a Fran question.
All right. We'll do our homework. We'll try to find out.
There's nothing illegal about government agencies sharing their own information. You can't share personal information, but that you can share a lot.
You're talking about aggregating the information and putting...
I think the Census Bureau's American Community the American Community Survey has some data on citizenship status.
Yeah, they have a lot, and that was the idea. Right. That's why the question people ask that: why is a question about citizenship on the census form so horrible?
Right.
Because it could be connected to an exact address.
A name and an address, not just an abstract. Yeah.
But I bet you they'll look at U.S. Department of Agriculture, the number of people who have work visas, who are farm workers. That'll be the top of the list, as opposed to people working in Silicon Valley.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Put another way, does anybody really trust Trump? I mean, not to be.
I don't.
Yeah, I mean, that's the point.
All right, we go to Sheldon, who says they think that there will be a concerted effort by all the local immigrant organizations and local groups that are concerned about losing electoral and financial support to have illegals and others counted. Cotty writes in and says, yet surveys indicate that most of the country was okay with the citizenship question. Controlling the narrative, Trump for years has talked about the immigration crisis, the Dems crisis, what crisis? Now, agreeing with Trump, Warren taking it a step further, trying to take credit away from Trump, acknowledging the crisis was there before Trump, exactly what Trump ran on in 2016, now Dems campaigning for Trump on the issue for 2020. A lot to unpack there.
Yeah.
I just don't
see. The question is, do we want to unpack it?
I do not.
Okay. Aaron?
Agreed.
All right.
Pass.
Diane says, does no one feel, without being racist or anti-anything, that a boundary is a real boundary? That your home is your home? Does no one feel we need a comprehensive and coherent immigration policy first? Does no one else believe that an open-door policy translate into a dissolution of nations? There must be others of us getting lumped into the Trump mosh pit.
Well, no. I mean, this is the old trope that Democrats believe in open borders. We don't. We do believe. We'd love to have a comprehensive immigration policy, but we aren't going to get it in 20 minutes. So what happens to all the people who don't fit into that policy now? DACA at the top of my list. Children who are brought in, no free agency at all involved, and they're going to be thrown out because we don't have a policy. Jen and I have arguments all the time. She goes, well, there's policy reasons for this. No, people are the concern of government, and that's Trump is totally playing into that. Yes, we need a comprehensive policy, but that would require Democrats and Republicans sitting down and working it out. Where's that meeting? Why isn't Trump convening this at the White House?
And when you hear the rhetoric around this, you don't hear people who are quite anti-immigrant saying we need comprehensive immigration reform.
Correct.
Right.
That's true.
I think Rosemary is right on the money here. You would have to really, if you were the president of the United States, you'd really have to care about a person or people who could get damaged. And this guy doesn't, not a bit. Yep. That's clear.
And you know, if we did have comprehensive immigration reform, I think you would see a lot of resistance to that coming from big business, especially in agriculture, who rely on exceptionally low-wage labor. A lot of those being undocumented immigrants. So, you know, I don't think Republicans want comprehensive immigration reform. They want a very specific type of immigration policy, and that's exactly what we're seeing.
But big labor and manufacturers ought to be in on the development of that policy. That's what's lacking. Yeah. You know, there are plenty of issues that are now divided into liberal or progressive, I guess we call it now, and conservative, that are in fact very confused. I mean, it's the borders is a good example. No, just because you don't like what's happening at the border now does not mean you want an open border. It's not either or, and we've lost all that nuance. Cybersecurity is another thing. I don't really want Facebook controlling what I write and when and all of that. And yet I understand that police sometimes need to get into my Facebook account. I get that. So what is lacking in our civil discourse? And this again goes back to Washington. And as Schumer is as responsible as Trump for this, there's no not just bipartisan, but multi-field discussions on how to solve these very difficult problems.
And a perfect example is President Obama tried to get legislation through on the DACA children issue.
Yes.
Could not get the Republican votes, and that's why he did the executive order.
Because he protected people.
Right. He was.
We don't have the policy, which would be great, but in the meantime, let's protect people. And that's missing now. Trump
is
not wrong to say the policy's messed up. We need it better. He's right about that. But in the meantime, you're going to deport hundreds, thousands. It is thousands. Yeah, hundreds of thousands of people who are contributing citizens in everything except technically to America. That's crazy.
But his bet, right, Rosemary? Let me just get this straight. His bet is that in the end, Americans really don't want immigrants in this country. That's his bet.
Yes.
Is he wrong?
Nope.
I think he doesn't want black and brown immigrants in the country. Remember
that? If they're from Norway, it's okay.
S-hole nation comment. I think he's fine with, as said, I think he's fine with people from the Nordic countries.
Okay. Let's assume you're right.
Or if they're models.
Let's assume you're right that it's black and brown that he's talking about. Is he right in betting that he will get more votes for that position from the independents in this country? Forget about his base because we know about them. But from the independents as a result of that stance? That's the question.
Yeah, I don't think he will. I think there are a lot of Republican women who do not like the way he's handling the immigration issue.
Because of the kids.
Of the kids. I think they're getting rid of Acosta today because people are really freaked out about the Epstein story and Acosta's role in protecting Epstein. I mean, the list goes on and on. And so, Ellen, I think the question is the right one. It's not just the base. It's how does he get above the 46% of registered voters who support him and get to 51%? And I don't think these positions are actually helping him.
I hope you're right, but I don't think it's ever been a losing bet any time in America to bet against fear and hatred of immigrants.
Yeah.
Agreed.
And it's not only in this country, obviously.
Right.
Back to the letters. Ellen says, does anybody remember Nannygate? Zoe Barrett and Kimba Wood, two nominees under the Clinton administration, had to withdraw because Republicans discovered that each had hired undocumented nannies. Now, we have a Republican president who has hired hundreds of undocumented workers and then refused to pay them, is setting up camps where children are dying and immigrants are being threatened with being rounded up and sent back to their own countries. The man is a deranged tyrant, and we have to get rid of him under any means necessary.
And not to get too personal, but two of his three wives were immigrants. And there are some legitimate questions about Melania's immigration status when
her
she
parents.
Came here.
Mm-hmm. And her parents, who used family chain immigration that he's so opposed to.
But they're not black or brown.
No. They're very white.
Jacqueline says, even if the enforcement does not happen, Trump has achieved his goal of terrorizing the immigrant community and winning points with his base.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Mark says, I agree. Trump is unqualified to be president, is despicable, mean-spirited, anti-immigrant, racist, etc., and should be removed from office somehow. But in spite of all that, if after all legitimate due process, a person has been found to be in this country illegally and a final deportation order has been issued, isn't it proper that the person be deported?
And that's exactly the question I was just asking. Where is the American public on this?
Well, there's a practical issue. There are millions, not just the people they're targeting on Sunday. There are millions of people who have that criteria that was just articulated. I'll go out on a limb and say I don't necessarily think that if you're here illegally, you need to be deported.
I agree.
I think if you are here illegally and you commit terrible crimes, the criminal justice system should work. You should have the due process that makes our country different from everyone else. But if you are, you know, most asylum cases are rejected. If you are fleeing violence or other untenable situations, but also if you just can't economically support your family. I don't think you need to be kicked out of this country.
I would also say that if you are going to pursue a policy of deportation, there's a way to do that humanely, too. You don't pick someone up on their way to work or they're picking up their kids at school mm-hmm. and spirit them out of the country without us. Why is that? Where is that written that obeying the law means that cruel punch? We don't do that to people going to prison.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in the 18th and 19th and early 20th century, the United States was very labor poor, so immigration was a huge net boom for the economy. And you know, during the 20th century, that was no longer the case. And now that we're starting to see the boomers retire and the workforce shrink, there needs to be some type of inclusive, sensible immigration policy that can augment our workforce.
Want to know what was so troubling about that letter, which we have now left behind, is here's a person who finds that the president is despicable, should be removed from office, should be impeached, should be out of here. And yet he ends his letter by saying, yep. And that's why I asked the question earlier, listen, I'm not for it. You know that. But earlier about, you know, shouldn't illegal immigrants basically be removed?
Yeah, I mentioned that yesterday. I think that in Jordan, I spoke to many Jordanian Americans who had left America. They were back in Jordan, hate Trump, hate all of his travel bans and bigotry, but said, you know, but he still does. He still is a little bit right about these immigrants. He's got something there. It's
and
just
by the
a
way, and by the way,
bias.
You know more about Jordan than any of us do. But the fact of the matter is they have an awful lot of immigrants in Jordan.
Yes, they do. Syrians.
So let's end, we have about 3 minutes left, with the story that we also mentioned yesterday, which is New Orleans bracing for an inundation of water as storm grows in the Gulf of Mexico. Residents have been told they have to prepare yourself, is what they've been told, 14 years after Hurricane Katrina killed more than 1,800 people and swamped the city. The deluge will be a major test of the updated drains and pumps that remove water from the streets, the earthen levees that hold back the river. I have to say, when I read that figure about killing more than 1,800 people, I really forgot that that was the was the death
toll. And 4,000 people died in Puerto Rico with Hurricane Maria.
And Art Jonas is with us right now. With our grandchild.
Oh, good. He's up with you.
Good. Yes, he is. Good. But he is getting daily and hourly reports from his next door neighbor. His neighborhood was not touched in Katrina. Think about that. The water is so high. Now, these houses are 3 and 4 feet above the ground. And so if the water comes up that high, it's coming into the their first floor.
Yeah. Yes.
And we know that what we're seeing there right now in his neighborhood is worse than what happened in Katrina. Oh. So it's a very difficult time.
I just hope, I mean, I pray for the people in New Orleans and part of Louisiana who are going to get hit again, are getting hit again. I just hope that the mainstream media coverage of the storm reminds us of the climate change connection.
Sure.
It's warm surface water temperature will make the wind much stronger, but also part of climate change is more intense rainfall. And you've got these old cities that just cannot absorb all of this water. And a lot of the damage will be water related.
And when we look at that, obviously we hope, you know, the storm moves and we don't have it as devastating as it appears. But it is safe to say, right, that we're just at the beginning of the hurricane season.
Yes, just starting.
Just starting.
Yeah, there will be many more Katrinas. There will be many more Marias. There will be many more Barrys.
And the big problem here was that even before the hurricane, or what was going to become a hurricane, was there. The rain was there, and it was so high that the water was above the wheels on Jonas's car.
So, kind of tying all of this together, when we talk about, you know, spending money on deportation and, you know, controlling the surge mm-hmm. of immigrants, remember, for every dollar that the government spends, there's an opportunity cost where that dollar could be reallocated towards, say, infrastructure development mm-hmm. to prevent things mm-hmm. that are projected to happen in mm-hmm. New Orleans and Miami and elsewhere. So
That's a really good point. How we better could spend money that's going into detention centers.
All right. We are out of time. My thanks to everybody. Oh, Judith.
Quick thing. Yes. I'll be in Lake Placid next Tuesday talking about plastic pollution with the Adirondack Garden Club. It's free and it's free and open to the public, 3 o'clock at the Lake Placid Conference Center. Come on by, especially students.
I'm sorry, and what's the topic?
Plastic pollution.
From the Adirondack Garden Club.
Yes, well, the garden clubs are real leaders on environmental conservation.
Alan?
And don't forget the agitators tonight at the Guthrie Center.
Anybody else have a plug? All right, nobody else? Sheila, did you have fun? Okay, great. We're going to take a break. We'll be back after this.